Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. It's on the Charlie Kirk Show. Congressman Bob Good gives us a first-person reaction. He was one of the 8 that voted to get rid of Kevin McCarthy. He joins the program. And also, an exciting new candidate running for Senate in Michigan. And we give you a short analysis of the New York civil fraud trial. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
What you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here. Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Crime is becoming the number one issue in America. We do not live in a safe country, especially if you just walk the streets in most urban areas. It's video after video, the statistics are out of control. We need to do something about it. Joining us now is Chief James Craig. He is running for the Senate in the beautiful state of Michigan and the important state of Michigan. Mr. Craig, welcome to the program. Tell us about your candidacy.
I'm excited to be here, Charlie. Thanks for having me on your show. As you probably know, I served in law enforcement for 44 years and had a chance to started my career in Detroit where I was born. And after being laid off, went to California, and I was with the Los Angeles Police Department for almost 3 decades, rose through the ranks. And then I fulfilled my dream of becoming a chief, went on and became the chief at Portland, Maine. A lot of people say, how do you leave Southern California and go to Portland, Maine? Well, that's a good question, but I did it, and it was a great experience. And so I stayed there a couple of years, and from there I went to Cincinnati and became the chief of police, stayed a couple of years. And in the state of Michigan, Detroit was going through bankruptcy, had an emergency manager, and they needed a chief. And they asked me if I wanted to come home, and the rest is history. I ended up staying 8 years. Until I woke up one morning, I said, I guess I want to go into politics. And that's how I got started on the journey. As you probably know, was in the last cycle running for Michigan governor, leading GOP candidate, until I got taken off the ballot based on some petition signatures. And after that was over, I thought I was, for the most part, done with politics. And then people kept saying, you know, you need to run for governor again. And then when Debbie Stabenow left or is leaving, it vacated, her seat's going to be vacant. People said, run for the U.S. Senate. So that's where I am. And I think when I look at U.S. Senate compared to governor, it's just so much going on wrong with our country under this administration. You talked about it in your beginning monologue. Crime is out of control, but it is controllable. I'll give you an example. Now, let's talk about 2020, post-George Floyd. A lot of cities, major cities were on fire, looting, police, you name it. What's going on in these major cities? Groups of people converge, incited riots. They came to Detroit, too. One big difference, though, Detroit didn't burn. There was no looting. There was no rioting. And there's a number of reasons for that. And certainly I can't take all the credit, but certainly I'm a leader who leads from the front. Those who converged on Detroit to wreak havoc knew I was there. knew I was not playing. I had men and women, the police officers, who were ready to act when necessary. And then we had a community. And, you know, Detroit's not naive to civil unrest. I remember 1967 riots of Detroit. But Detroiters said, no, you're an outsider. You're not going to come in and burn our city up. And so they stood with us. And to this day, we're not seeing the same level of criminal activity that you see. Well, you saw what happened in Philadelphia just, what, last weekend? Two nights of riot, you know, retail theft. And then in D.C., who by per capita probably has more law enforcement just because it is D.C., and a D.C. Or a U.S. congressman gets carjacked. And they've had 700 carjackings in D.C. And tell me why that's out of control. I mean, I have the answers. But your viewers, your listeners, they know the answers, too. Some of these blue cities have just given up. And you got these woke, progressive prosecutors that care more about the criminal and make them victims. And the true victims of these cities, they don't get the support any longer. They just don't.
No, and the stories that are pouring in of young women, there's this one that from Baltimore, this young lady holds the door in the elevator for a guy who should not have been on the streets, who previously raped, and he ended up raping and murdering her. It's just like, it just is so sad. So I want to play a clip of you announcing your candidacy for Senate. Play cut 55, please.
Well, for years, James Craig was the chief of police in Detroit, Michigan. He rose to the job. He brought clarity and competence. He served that city.
What about those families? What about small businesses? What about the victims of crime? It's going to require strong leadership, and that's what I bring to the table.
These are individuals who are political servants, not public servants.
These are tough times. It's a blood sport.
Look at what's going on in our state. Our country is going in a bad direction.
Americans want better.
Right.
And they want something different, and we're going to give it to them.
James Craig has made some noise about getting in.
Let the audience know, you are running for an open seat in your state, right?
I'm Chief James Craig. And I'm running for U.S. Senate.
So you're running for the U.S. Senate in Michigan. And what are the Democrats running on when it comes to crime? Are they even addressing the issue?
You hear crickets. You know, and I say, you know, when you talk, when the defund the movement was at its height, of course, a bunch of lefties got on board with that. And then they realized, oh, this is a bad strategy. So they backed off of the defund the movement, defund the police movement, but the damage was already done and is still done in many places. They can't hire enough police that are resigning, retiring. You can't retain them. So the damage is still done, and you know, but it's all over. I mean, police officers don't feel supported. Again, you know, the prosecutors are not supporting it. The jails are revolving doors. You brought up the example of the sad tale of the woman being attacked by a repeat offender and should not have been out. There's stories after stories of that all over our country. And you know what's sad? The sad reality is, where's the accountability of the judges? Where's the accountability of the prosecutors? Every now and then you get some cities that want to recall, like George Gascon in Los Angeles. And believe it or not, George Gascon and I came up in the Los Angeles Police Department together. Wow. He was a cop.
Wow. I'm curious, what changed, though? I mean, how do you go from a cop to doing what he's doing? What do you think got to him?
Well, I think what got to him, the environment, George Soros money. I'll say it again, George Soros money. You know, when you are a true public servant and you know that you're working for the people, and that's what I bring to the table, I understand my role. It's not the other way around. The people don't work for us. Those are political servants. And so public servants work for people. And it's a distinction from that. And so, you know, when I look at and what I learned through the course of my research, relative to the U.S. Senate, They've never had a law enforcement or a police chief elected to the U.S. Senate. And given what's going on today across our country, we need someone who understands what's going on the ground. Not to take anything away from those who have served as prosecutors.
Yep.
But they're not cops.
So really quick. So, Mr. Craig, just we're running out of time. Just plug your website, please, so people can support you.
Website is www.chiefjamescraig.com. Join me. Let's take back our country. This is not just about Michigan. This is our country. So again, www.chiefjamescraig.com. Let's take it back.
Thank you so much, Chief James Craig. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Do you know that the average American spends about 20 years in retirement? That's a long time to live without a steady income. We want to make sure you enjoy every moment of it and don't outlive your money. Retirement is about more than just investments. It's about living your best life. Let's not retire. Let's pivot. My friends at Pax Financial Group developed a course for the sole purpose of helping you pivot. If you want your own free guide of pivoting into the next chapter of life with purpose, visit paxfg.com/charlie. That is paxfg.com/charlie. I have some of my money managed by Pax Financial. They do a wonderful job. And remember, retirement is about more than just investments. The Charlie Kirk endorsement of the Pax Financial Group LLC was given for compensation, which creates an incentive to recommend Pax's advisory services. You need to make sure that disclaimer is very clear. So check it out, paxfg.com/charlie. This has been overshadowed by four indictments, but it shouldn't be. Donald Trump is undergoing a civil trial in the state of New York, brought to you by Letitia James. This is so sick, what is happening. And of course, not a single Republican AG across the country is willing to use their political power to investigate any one of the Democrats. Again, this is what's so interesting, is that she didn't just do this through criminal means, she does this through civil means. And so she's doing this through an investigation via a judge without a jury, despite there being no victim, saying Donald Trump defrauded the people of New York. So Letitia James, who campaigned on removing Donald Trump and getting Trump, deliberately engineered a legal case where a jury was not required. No jury. So then she could get the case in front of a very sympathetic judge. There have been reports attacking Trump, claiming that he is stuck with a bench trial because he didn't require a jury trial. That is a lie. Letitia James actively barred him from getting a jury trial because she knew a jury would be harder to get a conviction from. The case against Trump is called a fraud case. The way that fraud statutes are written in the criminal code, it is so broad, so broad. And in this particular criminal code, in on the books in New York, it is under section 6312 saying that there does not have to be a victim. Is that it's just if the government thinks that there was fraud, then it's fraud. So the judge issued a fine against all of Trump's lawyers. And according to an experienced New York attorney we spoke with, the judge only did this because they were representing Trump. He never would have done this with any other legal team over the legal strategy they pursued. So yesterday, Trump was put under a gag order with a threat of jail time for criticizing various members of the court. One of James's goals is to extract hundreds of millions of dollars from Trump in supposed gains from fraud. Man, this just basically as simple as it gets. They can just find a political enemy in any state, put in front of a sympathetic judge, not even a jury, and take your stuff, take your wealth. So then there's an obvious question. Who did Trump defraud? And that's the crazy part. Nobody. Nobody lost money because of Trump's business endeavors. Trump never used fraud to take out a loan he couldn't repay. He has repaid every loan. There are no victims. Yet for this fake fraud case, the plan is to entirely destroy Trump. The judge has ordered the dissolution of the Trump Organization and other businesses owned by Trump. He's ordered them to name potential receivers to take possession of Trump's property. So here's what I understand, Blake, and you could message in if the judge has already ordered this, why is there a trial? So it's an order and then a trial? That's what I don't understand. I'm genuinely curious about that. How does the judge do orders of the dissolution of business and then you have to stand for trial? So that I'm curious about that. So this could very well end with actors controlled by New York State taking possession of Trump Tower. So the lesson here is that you are a political enemy of the regime. They will shut down your business and seize your stuff. So I guess the trial is figuring out the penalty. The judge has already ruled that Trump committed fraud. We'll say this before and we'll say it again. This is behavior of a third world totalitarian regime. If it happened in any other country, we'd say as much. But many people in America don't care. They support this outright. Let's go to cut 31.
Well, I think that was very good. That last 5 minutes was outstanding because the judge essentially conceded that the statute of limitations that we won at the Court of Appeals is in effect. Therefore, about 80% of the case is over.
So there's a statute of limitations issue. This could easily be appealed. But they're going after Trump's business empire. And this is in addition to that crazy E. Jean Carroll case, the Alvin Bragg indictment in New York, Fannie Willis in Georgia, Jack Smith with two separate looming federal indictments. Has there ever been a man as targeted with lawfare as Donald Trump in the modern political era? Ever. The Democrats rejoice in this. The Democrats enjoy seeing the suffering of their political enemies. They will not stop. It is power for power's sake. How quickly can we get our enemies in jail and take their stuff? Republican Party is not responding. Republican AGs are not doing this. We're just sitting on our hands and hoping it gets better. Listen, as students begin heading back to school, do you think they'll be learning about the founding principles that made America the freest, most prosperous nation in history? Will they learn that our unalienable rights are God-given and not granted by government? Will they be given a full and honest account of our nation's history? The answer to all these questions is yes for students at Hillsdale College. And these days, in addition to teaching college students, Hillsdale has extended its teaching to K-12 students and lifelong learners like you and me. If you're not doing so already, one of the best ways to start learning from my friends at Hillsdale is through InPrimus, Hillsdale's free digest of liberty. My listeners can sign up for free at this special website, which is available for a limited time. It's at charlie4hillsdale.com. I look forward to InPrimus each month, and you can too. It's interesting, useful, and free. The best and smartest in conservative constitutionalist thought. Find out more about Hillsdale and InPrimus at charlie4hillsdale.com. They're an excellent college, America's greatest college, charlie4hillsdale.com. Joining us now is Congressman Bob Good. Congressman, thank you for joining the program. Been an eventful 24 hours. Give us your, let's just say, analysis of the events and how things have proceeded.
Well, it was a sad day yesterday that we had to vote to remove a speaker, but it was not a difficult decision. The country is hanging by a thread. We've got so many existential threats, and we must meet the moment. And the status quo certainly wasn't getting it, wasn't the answer. And we needed to disrupt Washington. And this was a win for the American people. This was a blow against the swamp cartel, the uniparty system that's been oppressing the American people, that's given us the $33 trillion national debt and a $2 trillion deficit this year with the Republican majority that has done very little in terms of truly engaging and throwing down, if you will, on the border issue or the weaponization of the government against its citizens, and had a former speaker now who led us, I'll use that term led loosely, but led us in passing a continuing resolution on Saturday that the Democrats in the House voted 209-1. Senate Democrats voted 51-0, and that was just a few months after we passed an unlimited increase to the debt ceiling, where Democrats overwhelmingly supported that because it allows us to spend as much as we want with no limits between now and January 25. And of course, the uniparty system is wonderful about coming together and spending your hard-earned taxpayer money. So it was a great day for America. It is a great opportunity for us to actually bring the kind of change that is needed to be brought in Washington. And I look forward to us selecting a new speaker here in the next few days.
So By the way, some breaking news. Steve Scalise officially puts his name in the ring for Speaker of the House. We'll talk about that in a second. Walk us through the sequence of events, though, Congressman, because we were talking about 9:30. Walk through what you and Matt Gaetz would call as the betrayal. What were you told was going to happen on 9:30? And then walk us through some play-by-play of how things actually unfolded.
Well, I have to go back a little bit further to January. Forgive me for going back to that again. But January, as we know, is historic. We're the first time in 160 years. Members of Congress took their own political futures into at risk, if you will, and were willing to sacrifice their own ambitions and their own the safety and comfort of a congressional seat in order to challenge their own presumptive speaker to vote time and again for change in terms of leadership of the conference. And the reason that I primarily gave for that was we couldn't repeat the failures of the past, where Republicans, when we had majorities in the House in the last 15 years or so, we passed all the major spending bills predominantly with Democrat votes, something the Democrats would never and have never done. And so ultimately, former Speaker McCarthy did prevail on the wee hours of the morning of January 7. And I pledged my personal support to him and told him, you know, I'm behind you. I want you to be successful because the country needs you to be successful. And we tried to work with him. And that was pretty strong through April until the debt limit agreement where he passed that unconditional debt ceiling, you know, surrender to the Biden demands of no spending cuts in return for a debt increase. And then he promised, Charlie, to pass all or at least bring to the floor for a vote all 12 of our spending bills, our appropriations bills, something that hasn't happened in 20 years, and that we would at least have votes on the floor and that he would he committed to going back to pre-COVID level spending for non-defense discretionary. Then he reneged on that, waffled on that, just in terms of bring, you know, trying to implement our conservative policies and cutting our spending to a very modest $1.471 trillion for non-defense discretionary. That number doesn't mean a whole lot to people, but essentially that would cut about $115 billion this year. Take our deficit from $2.2 trillion to $2.1. That's how radical we are. But cutting $100 billion would be historic by congressional standards because we never cut anything. But he waffled on that. He didn't bring the bills to the floor. We only had one out of the 12 come for a vote before we went to the August work period. And then we come back from August and there's no sense of urgency. We were gone 2 weeks in September. We should have stayed there and completed the negligent work there. And we only passed or brought to the floor four more bills for a vote and three of those passed. So we go to September 30 and it was clear to me actually on September 29, last Friday, that he was willing to do anything to avoid a government shutdown. And when you're willing to not when you're not willing to endure any pressure or temporary discomfort of a pause in the non-essential 15% of government operations, that means you're guaranteed to lose in any kind of negotiations with the Senate or the White House. And he proved that, and that was the final straw for me. He proved that with that continuing resolution, keeping all the Biden, Pelosi, Schumer policies in place for another 45 days, the policies that are crushing us fiscally and bankrupting the country, and the policies under which the American people are truly suffering, as you know. And so it's clear that he was not going to keep his commitments. We knew he was probably not the change agent that we needed, obviously, but we had to give him a chance to demonstrate that one way or another after he was elected speaker. And so I compliment my friend Matt Gaetz for being the one who had the courage to go ahead and file the motion. I had let him know I would absolutely vote for it if anyone filed it. I was not going to vote to keep Kevin McCarthy under any circumstances. And, you know, we're trying to decide when was the best time to do it. When did it make the most sense strategically? Matt decided it was Monday night. And I think that was demonstrated to have been the case, that was a wise move to do that.
So I want a couple of thoughts. Were you surprised that Democrats did not bail Kevin McCarthy out? Because when I was talking to Matt over the weekend, he actually thought that, you know, this is an important vote, but, you know, Democrats are going to do this. Were you shocked that it succeeded?
Honestly, I was conflicted. I didn't know. On the one hand, I thought, you know, Kevin McCarthy's kind of doing everything they want on the big stuff. I mean, we passed messaging bills out of the House that have no chance in the Senate, and he was trying to hold the Republican coalition there together to do this stuff that was just kind of messaging bills. But when the chips were down and we really needed him to lead on the debt ceiling and in the appropriations process, he was MIA and was essentially doing what the Democrats wanted. So I thought, why wouldn't they just sort of protect him? You know, they could probably get some concessions out of him to do so. And because they could only do worse, I would submit, with a Republican speaker. On the other hand, it was hard to imagine. They don't like Kevin McCarthy a whole lot more than any other Republican. And so I think there's probably some personal animosity towards him from the Democrats. And so it was also hard to imagine they would sort of try to bail him out. But I just didn't know. I thought it was maybe 50-50. We were going to do what we thought was right and either force the Democrats to save Speaker McCarthy to demonstrate who he really was and who he was working for, or to be able to vacate him by going ahead and having what we thought was going to be around 10 votes. We had 11, as you know, that agreed to advance the motion voted against tabling the motion and allowed it to proceed. Then we had 8 ultimately vote to vacate.
So I want to play a piece of tape here, and I want your response. Newt Gingrich calling you a traitor that should be run out of public life. Let's play cut 46.
96% of the Republicans voted for McCarthy. 4% voted against him. From my position as a longtime Republican activist, they're traitors. All 8 of them should, in fact, be primaried. They should all be driven out of public life. What they did was to go to the other team to cause total chaos. We ought to be focusing on Biden. We ought to be focusing on the economy. We ought to be focusing on the border. Instead, you're going to get a week or 10 days of the media focusing on Republican disarray. It's an astonishingly destructive behavior by a handful of egocentric people who think they're superior to 96% of the conference.
So are you a traitor, feel superior, and egocentric, Bob Good?
Well, former Speaker Gingrich was equally critical of us back in January. He thought Kevin McCarthy was just a swell guy, was the perfect guy for Speaker, and we ought to all just surrender our vote to the majority of the conference. And it didn't really take 218 to become Speaker. You just were supposed to figure out what the pulse of the conference was and then fall in line and do whatever the majority did. So he opposed us back in January. I think he struggles to look at anything through his former Speaker lens is the way he sees it. And I guess he didn't like it when members of Congress maybe had their own thoughts and didn't do what he told him to do as Speaker. And so I suppose he's sticking up for his fellow former Speaker now, Kevin McCarthy.
So now there's a question of who should be Speaker. Who are you going to support? It looks like Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise are two in the running. Your block, if you will, right? Rosendale, you could put Roy, Luna, yourself. Which candidate are you going to be more likely to voice support for?
Well, I will resist naming any particular candidates, but I will say that we're going to be carefully vetting, challenging, testing these candidates. You know, it's funny, as you know, back in January and again more recently, some of the media members say, oh, you don't have another candidate, you don't have a plan. When anyone who knows how things work in Washington realized that as long as there was the presumption of a particular person to be Speaker, that those who have stature or credibility or influence throughout the conference are not going to raise their hand and say, I will challenge the throne and risk whatever consequence to them would come from that. And that's not how you advance in the conference system and in the swamp system, is by challenging leadership publicly. But what we knew, as soon as Speaker McCarthy was dethroned, you'd have a number of members of Congress raise their hands and say they're interested, put their hat in the ring. In addition to the ones that you've mentioned, you've got Kevin Hearn from Oklahoma and one or two others who are rumored to be candidates and who others have mentioned as candidates. And I've had several reach out to me. And we're going to be vetting and testing them. The good news is, Charlie, we're going to have a contest and a competition, as it should be. We'll have that on smaller group levels between now and Tuesday. And on Tuesday, we'll have a candidate forum where they'll have to present themselves to the conference, be held up to scrutiny, and then to earn the trust and the support of 218 members. That's the way it's supposed to work. It's not supposed to be a coronation.
In closing, and I'm sure you're getting this question a lot, Congressman, what do you have to say to the criticism that you voted with the Democrat conference yesterday? Some people are asking, how would you respond to that?
Yeah, I don't have any control how the Democrats vote, but what I did was a vote for change in Washington to try to save the country. Again, we've got a small window of opportunity to do that. If you thought Kevin McCarthy was going to do that suddenly he was going to summon the courage and the resolve to fight in a way he never has in his entire career except to be Speaker, we just couldn't afford to continue. And it was clear after Saturday that this was an abysmal failure of leadership. And, you know, to stand against your own Republican Party when it's not being, I'll say, Republican enough or conservative enough or following through on its principles is far different than members of our own party who say they want to collude with the Democrats to pass bills that the Democrats want, pass legislation that the Democrats want, or establish a coalition government with Democrats. That's a totally different thing.
Bob Good, we will be watching closely. For whatever it's worth, I think Jim Jordan is an excellent selection. So that's my 2 cents for you today. Congressman Good, thanks so much.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. When the government used emergency edicts during COVID to restrict the gathering and worship of churches, three pastors facing the risk of imprisonment, unlimited fines, and their own churches being ripped apart took a courageous stand and reopened their doors in the face of a world that chose to comply. The Essential Church is a feature-length documentary that explores the struggle between the church and government throughout history. The story uncovers those who have sacrificed their lives throughout history for what they believe in. Rediscover why the church is essential and how we prove this stand remains true from a scientific, legal, and most importantly, a theological and biblical perspective. This is not your typical movie. It will change your life. You need to see this movie with your family and friends. The Essential Church is streaming today exclusively at salemnow.com. That's Essential Church Movie streaming at salemnow.com. That is salemnow.com. Check out The Essential Church Movie. It's terrific. So go to salemnow.com right now. So many stories still to cover here. So Donald Trump is facing this fraud trial in New York. The House is without a speaker. And I want to push back on one of the narratives that is out there right now. And it's all over the place, politico.com. And they say, the rudderless GOP careens towards 2024. Kevin McCarthy undoing underscores a bigger problem, the inability to govern itself that risks imperiling the party's chances in 2024. Politico.com, Politico Magazine, the House GOP is a failed state. Kevin McCarthy's ouster is a dramatic evidence, if redundant, about the modern state of the GOP. So there is some, there's a little bit of truth to these stories, as it is usually with the media. They'll find a sliver of truth and build an entire narrative of lies around a little kernel of truth. But what's the real problem here? The problem is exactly what we have been articulating on this program over the last 11 months, over the last 18 months, since we've started this show. Which is, this never would have happened. Motion to vacate, what they're calling chaos, Newt Gingrich is calling people traitors. If the Republican Party was as conservative as their voters, none of this would have happened. And yet, it is a mess. Bob Good himself said this was sad. You can take whatever you want out of it. Sad, you could rejoice and all that. I don't love the media's characterization, though. They say inability to govern. Why is that inability to govern there? It's because there are proclamations and promises made to the base of the Republican Party that are never saw through. They're never seen through, I should say. Ever. These proclamations, we're going to defund IRS agents and we're going to secure the border and we're going to do all these different things. And this is what's changed. And this is what bothers me about Newt Gingrich is Newt Gingrich, again, is a friend and friend of the show. And I hope he'll come on again. We just see this completely differently. But there was an old political environment that used to exist. And this was before shows like Steve Bannon, before Tucker Carlson, before our show, before Jack Posobiec, before all of these different programs. The audience is smarter, more informed, more engaged, more aware than any other time. And I've been very, very clear about this, okay? I've known Kevin for years. Kevin hosted our students at the congressional, in Congress this summer. He was very gracious, our student leaders. And you guys should support that because you want conservative students to, you know, see Congress and all that. But Kevin disappointed me on some of the debt stuff. He disappointed me on 930. He disappointed me on J6 stuff. But I'm not going to do the anti-Kevin thing. You guys know my position there. He's always been good to me. He's been good to Turning Point USA. But you can only play with the base so much. You can only play with the base so much without having some sort of a reaction. But Kevin, I think, was getting bad advice from Newt Gingrich, which was saying that, oh, just kind of ignore the base. What's different is you, is that you're reading the appropriations bills. You're, because of the advent of digital social media, because of more radio shows and more podcasts and more things that are available, it is harder to hoodwink the conservative base than ever before. And that is something that the old establishment is just learning. And with all possible due respect, Speaker Gingrich, you just can't go on Sean Hannity's show and saying we're going to run people out of public life and they're traitors, because you're basically attacking their voters when you say that. And this is the rise of the new right. This is my new book that's coming out, Right Wing Revolution, where I say that when I host this program, it takes hours of work to be ahead of you, the audience. I have to know my stuff because you will correct a factoid. You'll send me articles. You'll say, no, Charlie, that's not right, or this or that. That never used to be the case. Not to say that the audience wasn't engaged, but it was nowhere like this. And so then when there is disappointment, when there is, we're going to do this, and we're not going to do that, we're going to do this, and that falls short of the expectation, the base, the audience, the people pounce on it. And the regime and the old Republicans are shocked that there are millions of patriots that care, are informed, engaged, and holding them accountable. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.